Good morning, everyone. As everyone else in the world is, we're following the latest from Iran this morning. I'm John Hockenberry. Welcome to The Takeaway. Authorities in Iran are now acknowledging that the number of votes cast in 50 cities exceeded the actual number of votes. That's what state television is reporting, and it is a direct challenge to the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, who asserted that the ballot was fair as recently as last week. Joining us now is someone with fresh memories of the 1979 Iranian Revolution, which may or may not be a model for what's going on in Iran today. Bakr Moen is the former head of the BBC's Persian Language Service. He grew up in Iran and is the author of the book, the authoritative book on Khomeini, Ayatollah Khomeini, who, of course, was the architect and spiritual leader of the Islamic Revolution back in 1979. Khomeini, Life of the Ayatollah. Bakr Moen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
First of all, let me just ask you right off the top. You're watching these pictures and watching the people in the streets. How reminiscent of 1978 and 1979 is this for you? And what parallels should we not be drawing here, if any?
Well, the demonstrations and the reaction of the security services very much reminiscent of what was happening in 1979. This is a very interesting parallel. However, there are a number of differences. At that time, we had a government in charge that was exhausted, a Shah in power who had cancer without anybody knowing about it. And he was a lone man, in a sense, who used to make all decisions himself. And because of his cancer, he was paralyzed. He was waiting for the American and the British ambassador to see him and give him some ideas and how the world is reacting to what is happening inside the country. There is also one other parallel, is that even at that time, people used to go to their rooftops and they were shouting, Allahu Akbar, God is great, which was very unusual until then in Iran. And I think the present lot are learning from that. I think the third area that is very similar is the feel-bad factor, the unhappiness with the policies carried out by the state. I mean, the young people who are going into the street today want more freedom, social freedom, better life. The election for some of them really is an excuse to express their pent-up frustrations. But there are areas the parallel is not there, and I can go into them if you want me to.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment, but that's an interesting set of parallels for us to evaluate what happened in 1978 and 79 and what's unfolding right now. Just out of Iran is Robert Dreyfus, who's been reporting in Iran, covering the election for The Nation, where he's a contributing editor. He also blogs for Tehran Bureau. You're out of the country like most, if not all, foreign journalists. Robert Dreyfus, how slowly is this unfolding versus what we're seeing here in the United States, where it looks as though every day things are exploding?
Well, you know, going back to 1979, the revolution then took really more than a year to build. The first signs of it were at the end of 1977, and it gradually built wave upon wave until it crested around the end of 78, the beginning of 79. It's very possible that this current confrontation between an increasingly isolated regime in which the so-called leader or Rahbar, Ayatollah Khamenei, is increasingly isolated and perhaps even to some degree captive of or at least codependent with President Ahmadinejad, arrayed against not only the entire class of, you know, students and other protesters and workers and economic elite and so on, but even the clergy has begun to move away from this narrowly based regime. So there's no telling. This is a very unpredictable situation that will probably take months to play out. I can't resist pointing out that one more parallel with 30 years ago is that the regime then of the Shah blamed the BBC for all of its troubles.
Interesting.
And once again, in 2009, the current regime is blaming the BBC for inflaming the demonstrations. In both cases, obviously, wildly exaggerating the role of of a radio network.
On the other hand, Robert, it's great to pass the great Satan mantle onto the BBC here in the United States from my personal perspective, although that's a cheap shot and we'll move on. Bakr Moeen and Robert Dreyfus, let's talk about this for a moment. The iconic images of the Islamic Revolution in the beginning were these enormous crowds in Tehran of people clad in black. Then it became the face of the Ayatollah himself, who, even without much retouching on the cover of Time magazine, looked pretty sinister to American eyes. And then finally, the iconic images of Iran became the hostage crisis. This time around, it's really these images of individual people being brutalized on the streets of Tehran. Bakr, what do you make of this contrast?
Well, the contrast is there. You can't hide it. But the one major difference is that during that revolution, you had three means of communication. Books of Ayatollah Khomeini published like cassettes sent to Iran, cassettes of his voices distributed, and his statement being copied by various people and distributed at night. Now, you've got Twitter, you've got Facebook, you've got internet, you've got satellite television from all over. Anything happens, and half an hour later is either on YouTube or somewhere else. This is really a new vibration that didn't exist at all in Iran. And I think it's the new generation that is coming forward with their English placards. Before, you never saw in Iran that sort of thing. Occasionally, possibly one. Now, in every city that you see people are demonstrating, they've got these English placards because they want not only to show to themselves that they are different class, but also they want the world to know about them and what is happening to them. So I agree with Robert that it's really picking up. But I still believe that it's a movement to correct the wrongs. It's not a revolution on the same scale.
Although the Death to America placards were always in English in my memory of covering Iran in those days. Robert Dreyfus, and that's not to dispute your point, Bakr, I think it's absolutely clear what you're saying. Robert, one contrast, it seems to me, and comment on anything in the question that I asked earlier, but just to refine it, unlike 1978 and 79, where there was a face of the Iran, there's not a face of the Iranian government. There's no Shah face of the authority in Iran right now. It's a kind of diffuse tear gas image.
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly in the West, the face of Iran is Ahmadinejad. He's been demonized and is, you know, now even more radioactive, which makes it much more difficult for Iran to carry out any kind of opening to the West or to respond to President Obama's overtures. And inside Iran, the face is really the leader. It's Khamenei, the Ayatollah, who runs the show. And people, you know, are polarized increasingly about both of these figures inside Iran. I think it's a real crisis of legitimacy for this regime, and it's one that they're going to find it very difficult to extricate themselves. I mean, in despite of what, you know, Bakr was saying, which I agree with about all these technologies and everything, this is a regime which, unlike the Shah's, is ruthless and fanatical and is willing to use sheer force to crush any kind of rebellion or revolt or even mild opposition against it. So,
well, although there may be some dispute over who's ruthless and brutal, and the Pahlavis had much to answer for.
No, not at all. I don't agree at all. I think that the number of people that were killed under the Shah's regime is minuscule compared to the number of people that have been butchered by these guys. And the Shah, as Bakr said earlier, did not. I mean, the army, some of them came to him in the last days and said, let us fire on these protesters. And he refused. These guys will not refuse if it comes to that. They will gun down hundreds in the streets.
All right, Bakr, before we go, take us through some of the history back in 78, 79. There was the Shah, then he left. Then there was the Bazargan regime. And eventually there was an Islamic-created Bakhtiar regime. And then Ayatollah Khomeini came in and reset the deck. What are we likely to see as things progress here, even if it takes a year?
Well, the Shah left Bakhtiar behind as his last prime minister, and it was followed by the arrival of Ayatollah Khomeini from exile, and Bazargan took over. The difference this time is really, under the Shah, the regime was united. And the division was between the regime and the opposition. At the moment, what we have got is a disunited leadership in Iran. There is not one man show, although Ayatollah Khamenei took all the responsibilities for Ahmadinejad has done or doing for himself. But nevertheless, the regime is not really united as it was before. And also, there is no, as you said, there is diffused leadership. And so there is no center of hate.
All right. Well, Bakr Moeen, the former head of the BBC's Persian Language Service, stay with us. And Robert Dreyfus, thanks so much. Just back from a reporting trip to Iran, contributing editor with The Nation. Thank you, Robert.
Appreciate it.